Track 12, and this week's feature item is once again taken from TNF Soundings. Soundings contributor Liz tells the story of Marie Curie's personal and professional life. Marie Curie was born in November 1867 in Warsaw and died in France in 1934. She was, of course, the woman who discovered radium and polonium. She won two Nobel Prizes and has left a lasting legacy on today's world, not least through the X-rays used every day in hospitals. Here is her story.
TNF Soundings. Features from across the UK.
Hello, folks. It's Liz here. I've given myself really an almost impossible challenge, because this talk is about the amazing life, legacy and joy of the person Marie Curie. What a life. Regarded by many as the most important woman in science and one of the most important people who's contributed so much to our present day lives. So better begin then, I suppose. Marie Curie was born Maria Sklodowska near Warsaw in Poland in 1867. Now, the location in Poland is very important in her life, and the date of this birth, 1867, also very important. At that time, Warsaw and Poland was occupied by the Russian Empire and very heavily occupied, more of that anon. And also, the mid-19th century was not a good time to be born in Poland. Her family had been comfortably off, but they supported the Polish independence movement, which had been trying to free the people for a number of decades. Because of their activities, the family lost their property and their fortunes through these challenges. And Maria's father taught mathematics, but then he was directed away from a well-paying job because of his political views. So growing up, life was difficult, but their joy in knowledge is something that comes through. Her father and her mother were both determined to educate their children, their boys and their girls, and give them chances. Her mother died of TB in 1878 when Maria was 10 years old. And from then on, the powerful woman in her life was her sister, Bronislawa. These girls were taught at home. Their father smuggled home technical equipment so he could nurture their love and their talent in science. And when his knowledge wasn't sufficient anymore, he enrolled them in really a clandestine higher education system, which was trying to dodge the power of the occupying Russian forces. It was nicknamed the Flying University. And that's where she developed more skills, more interest. Now, what could be the next stage? The decision was made. She and Bronislawa, who was a few years older, made a deal. Her older sister would go to Paris, would develop her talents, but the money issue would be sorted by the younger sister, Marie, taking a job. And that's what she did. She worked as a governess in Poland for 5 years to gather money to support her sister's education in Paris and then hopefully to get enough money to have her own freedom and her own access to education when she could move also to Paris. And that's what she did. She finally left Poland. She worked and was able to manage the move to Paris. At first, she stayed with her sister, but that didn't allow her long enough at her work. And here's another aspect of Marie as she became Marie Curie. She not only found love when she moved to Paris, she found the capacity for relentless study and relentless work. She moved into a tiny garret flat near to the laboratory. Well, actually, that's a bit of a misnomer because she was never given a laboratory for years. It was an abandoned coal shed. It was the end of somebody else's laboratory. And that's when she met Pierre Curie, a fellow scientist, a man who was also incredibly interested in the new developments. And he recognised her talent. He recognised an interest in her work and he offered her space in his laboratory. They started to work together. He realised her huge talent. And he realised that the 5'1" little woman from Poland was actually a soulmate. I'm sorry if I make it seem a bit Mills and Boone, but they were enormously in love with each other. And on that basis, they were married and they decided they would live, work and propel their science into the future. "You're getting married, how wonderful," said their friends. "I'll buy you a wedding dress," said one of her friends. And Marie Curie's words were, "I have no dress except the one I wear every day. If you are going to be kind enough to give me a wedding dress, please let it be practical and dark so that I can put it on afterwards to go to the laboratory." And indeed, that became her work dress. What then followed in their years together was dedication, hard work. Hard work, hard physical work, hard brain work in the search for new elements. They knew they were out there, or rather they were inside other things. I'm no scientist, I can't really explain it very well to you. But they also were together as a team in their marriage. They went long cycling trips. They enjoyed holidays together. And in fact, one of the very, very few photographs I have found where Marie Curie is smiling, it's when she's standing beside Pierre and they're both in their cycling gear and they're going to wander through the fields and the forests round about Paris. They had two daughters. During this time, she continued to work. They found a governess who was also from Poland because her heritage to bring her children up, speaking Polish, knowing about Poland was hugely important to Marie. So when they finally were able to discover and make the knowledge of these new elements public, her first choice as a name for this new element was polonium, in honour of her native Poland. In 1898, they announced a second element, and that was one they called radium, from the Latin word for ray. This research was groundbreaking, and this research was brought to the notice of the Nobel Prize Committee. And Marie Curie, along with Pierre Becquerel and Pierre Curie, were jointly awarded the Nobel Prize for Physics in 1903. In fact, at first the Nobel Committee had not wanted to include Marie Curie in their submission, but Pierre was adamant that the work was a joint effort and it was every bit much the work of Marie as it was of him. At that time, their older daughter, Irene, was 6 years old. Now, this partnership was very, very cruelly cut short because Pierre Curie, at the age of only 46, was run over one rainy, dark, late afternoon in Paris. And he died, and Marie Curie was left with less support, less funding, a widow in her personal life and in her work life, and her two young daughters. She picked herself up. She did her best to continue her work. In recognition of her value, the Paris University actually appointed her a professor. because they saw that Pierre's death was not the end of the Curie work. It was only, sadly, a stopping off point. What did she do? She continued to motivate the people who worked with her, and she continued to see the potential for this use of this radioactivity, radiation. And sadly, the chance came for her to develop her expertise and to show its practical application when World War I began. Because it was clear to Marie that early diagnosis was vital for the men in the forces on the Western Front. The longer delay between the injury and the treatment meant the further greater damage to the soldiers. She learnt to drive. She developed a set of mobile radiological centres near the front line. She even learnt, for goodness sake, how to keep her mobile uses going, because these mobile ambulances were really quite fragile vehicles apart from anything else. She was determined to get this technology to the front. And really, it's estimated that by the end of the war, almost 1 million soldiers had been given the chance of the X-ray by Marie and her mobile units. They were known as the Petite Curies, the Little Curies. Her first close assistant was actually her 17-year-old daughter, because that's the age Irene was by the time of World War I. And that estimate of 1 million soldiers was certainly possible because of her expertise, but also because of her phenomenal work. She worked and worked and worked to save lives, to expose people to the positives of what her new technology could do. Also, looking ahead, she herself was exposed to these rays. She was using unshielded equipment because of her work as a radiologist in the field hospitals of World War I. I'm realising I can't really do a proper justice to Marie Curie, but I hope I've held your interest as long as this. What did she do post-war? She realised that she had a celebrity status which she could use to promote her technology and her knowledge. She didn't much like the celebrity status. Really, she was awarded a second Nobel for chemistry in 1911, the only person at that time to receive a Nobel Prize twice. So those awards and her work rate and her ambition led her to be feted all over the world. A ticker tape parade, meeting President Harding in the United States. Did she want this? Not really. Did her adult daughters, Irene and a younger daughter, Eve, did they shield her, really, from meeting the press? Yes, they did, because they recognised their mother's talent was not in making quick sound bites to the media. Their mother's talent was in living the life of a dedicated scientist, of seeing the potential of life-saving work through her discovery. Now, many of you will know that the life-saving work and the discovery of radiation and the further discovery of those elements has the dark side, because some scientists went on another path leading from Marie's work, the structure of the atom, and sadly, the creation of the weapons of mass destruction. That was obviously not what Marie Curie wished. But she also knew she wasn't in charge and couldn't control scientific advances. So she did all she could in her life to promote the peaceful use of the technology. She never took a bean of extra money for her discoveries, even as other scientists made fortunes, even commercial interest made fortunes. That wasn't Marie Curie's way. She lived a life of huge work. But I think when I'm coming towards the end of this, I want you to realise and know how much joy she had in her life, how much pride she had in her life. She was able to see the practical application of all these hours and hours of heavy manual work and study with Pierre in the laboratory in Paris. And when she died in 1934, it was seen as the loss of one of the towering figures of modern science. I think I want to finish the Marie Curie by giving you two of the quotations that she said. There's one that maybe is a bit difficult to actually accept. "Nothing in life is to be feared, it is only to be understood." That's a high hurdle to cross. But perhaps the other one is one that we can aspire to. "My first principle is never to let oneself be beaten down by persons or events." We might manage it most of the time. She managed it most of the time. But when she did have the dark times in her life, she was able to pick herself up. And her contribution, her joy, her pride, and her final achievements are something that we should really recognise, if only to understand why the Marie Curie Charity was named in her honour, because who actually has contributed more profoundly to helping people through serious illness than Marie Curie? And thank you so much for listening and enjoying her story today.
TNF Soundings.